Today is Thursday, February 18th, and you are listening to International Edition and the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Joe Biden promises help to U.S. states hit hard by winter storms.
FEMA has supplied generators to Texas and is preparing to move diesel into the state to ensure the continued availability of backup power.
Also ahead, Myanmar's military arrests nearly 500 protesters.
Myanmar military issued arrest warrants for six celebrities who were accused of encouraging civil servants to strike.
Plus, Nigeria's President Buhari calls for rescue of abducted students. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden assured governors of U.S. states hit hard by winter storms that the federal government stands ready to offer any emergency resources needed, the White House said. This as millions of people in the southwestern state of Texas are without heat and electricity again, following a historic winter storm that has killed 21 people so far, and as icy conditions threaten to plague the nation's largest state and surrounding region for days. Some 2.7 million Texas households are still without power. The unusual icy and cold conditions snarled traffic, shut down most commercial activities, and shuttered COVID-19 inoculation centers, hindering vaccine supplies. Texas Governor Greg Abbott warned that conditions across the state are bad.
Right now, there still remains about 10,000 megawatts that is off the grid and as a result is not contributing to power in the state. People want to know how decisions are made about whose power is turned off and whose power is left on. And I want to let you know how that process works. Decisions about power outages are made by either city-owned utilities or co-op-owned utilities. And it would not be any state-based entity that makes those decisions, except power outages by investor-owned utilities. Many transportation issues across the state on roadways in every region will remain challenging for the next few days.
That's Texas Governor Greg Abbott. President Biden supports studying possible reparations for Black American descendants of slaves. AP correspondent Mike Grecia reports.
The White House said Wednesday President Joe Biden supports studying the legacy of slavery, but Press Secretary Jen Psaki stopped short of saying Biden would sign a bill authorizing reparations for descendants of slaves.
He'd certainly support a study, but we'll see what happens through the legislative process.
On Capitol Hill, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas is co-sponsor of H.R. 40.
Clearly, we require reckoning to restore national balance and unity.
Polling suggests resistance to government reparations for the descendants of slaves. In the fall of 2019, an Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll found only 29% of Americans supported paying cash reparations. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is out of office but not out of politics. Trump remains popular among many Republican voters and is now picking fights with some leaders in a battle for control of the Republican Party. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the story.
The Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino was demolished Wednesday, the last remnants of a once dominant gambling destination in Atlantic City. But the former president is not giving up on his political brand. On Tuesday, he attacked Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, the top Republican who blamed him for the Capitol siege on January 6th.
President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events.
In a statement, Trump said Republican senators who support McConnell will not win again. He threatened to back right-wing primary challengers against party incumbents.
The main goal with that is to make sure that the 75 million people who voted for President Trump know that the president is still going to be active and engaged in U.S. politics, that he is going to keep pushing for candidates who support the America First agenda.
Seven Republican senators who voted guilty in the impeachment trial face criticism, even censure from the party, underscoring the refusal of grassroots Republicans to break from Trump.
The Republican Party is a party of Trump. And unfortunately, you have the principled, you know, moderate conservatives, the, you know, I would say center-right people, which is probably where I fall more politically, who I think feel sort of, I would say, homeless right now.
Trump's role in the Capitol riot is likely to remain in focus as the House of Representatives move to establish an independent commission similar to the commission that studied the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. The former chair of the 9/11 commission, Thomas Keene, is urging a bipartisan commission on the January 6 siege.
This is not a commission to get President Trump. This is a commission of fact finders.
A recent poll shows 75% of Republicans say they would like to see the former president play a prominent role within the party.
We love you. We will be back in some form.
But criminal investigations on Trump's role in the Capitol riot and election interference, as well as legal challenges over suspicions of tax and insurance fraud, may also determine the former president's future role in politics. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Protesters were out again across Myanmar on Thursday. The daily protests and strikes that have paralyzed many government offices show no sign of easing despite appeals by the junta for civil servants to return to work and threats of actions if they do not. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
The Myanmar military issued arrest warrants for six celebrities who were accused of encouraging civil servants to strike and join the protest against this month's coup. The strikes have paralyzed many government offices and businesses, but one name on the warrant list, actor Lu Min, posted defiantly on his Facebook page that, quote, "It's amazing to see the unity of our people. People's power must return to the people." Despite junta appeals for civil servants to return to work and threats if they do not, there has been no sign of the strikes easing. Motorists in Yangon also continued with a campaign to show their opposition to the coup by driving at a snail pace throughout downtown traffic on Thursday. Last night, in the country's second largest city, Mandalay, security forces opened fire with rubber bullets on railway workers who had gone on strike earlier in the week. That's according to local residents. And one charity worker was wounded in the leg. Neither the army nor the police made any immediate comment on the incident, but the army's Facebook page said forces were providing security and, quote, "to make sure people have tranquility and sound sleep." Nearly 500 people have been arrested for taking part in the protests.
That's Reuters' Libby Hogan. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has called for the quick and safe rescue of the latest abduction victims in the country. Authorities say unidentified gunmen kidnapped 42 people, including 27 students, from a government science college, three staff and 12 members of their families in Niger State. One student was killed while trying to escape the attack. For more, VOA's James Bate spoke with Garba Shehu, Senior Special Assistant to President Buhari, on media and publicity.
The president has been briefed about the incident and that the school had been broken into and some students and staff. The numbers have been given by the state government as being 27 students and about 20 others. So the president condemned it and directed very senior military and security officials to immediately move to the state to go and coordinate the rescue. His directive is clear and unequivocal that all of the schoolboys must be brought home safely and without any delay.
President Buhari recently appointed new service chiefs, but your critics are saying that the federal government has consistently failed to provide security for Nigerians.
They are entitled to their opinions. However, we want President Buhari to be judged fairly. There is no country without crime anywhere in the world. We have our own share, and the president should be judged by the responses to the challenges as they arise. And I think that this that the president has set for this country, immediate responses had followed incidents such as this. This had happened under his watch. 110 girls in Yobe State, they were all recovered except one who unfortunately was denied release by a Boko Haram terrorist. It has happened more than 300 in Katsina State. All of them brought home safely to their families. So we are not a country without crime. There is criminality, but we want to be judged by how effectively and efficiently we respond to these challenges. And I think that the president is doing exceedingly well dealing with these challenges.
Shehu, it appears the federal government is being reactive instead of proactive in dealing with these kidnappings. I want you to react to what I think a Senate committee has said recently, and that is perhaps the federal government or President Buhari should declare a national state of emergency.
Well, they're entitled to their opinion, as I've always said, and I believe the president would see the statement by the Senate and will act accordingly. It's entirely for him to decide. The government is proactive because there are many incidents about to happen. They have been aborted, dealing with criminals in so many areas. Arrests have been made, prosecutions are being made, and plots are being aborted. So I think that people, when they comment on these things, they should look at the totality of what is going on all across the country. It is not wrong to be reactive, because when it happens, you have to react. But it is also happening that we are aborting a lot of plots that would have turned deadly if they were allowed to happen.
Shehu, thank you so much for your time speaking with us. We do appreciate very much.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
That's Garba Shehu, Senior Special Assistant to President Buhari on Media and Publicity. He spoke with my colleague, James Batte, from Abuja. After Fitstan starts, South Africa is finally launching its vaccination campaign, with President Cyril Ramaphosa being among the first in the country to get a shot alongside health workers. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
It did not hurt a bit, President Cyril Ramaphosa said Wednesday, shortly after he became one of the first South Africans to receive the hot-off-the-plane coronavirus vaccine at a public clinic in Cape Town's sprawling Khayelitsha Township.
First, I was a bit terrified of this long needle that was going to be embedded into my arm, but it happened so quickly, so easily. It was just a prick on my flesh, and I really did not feel much pain.
68-year-old president did ask the nurse if he could close his eyes before getting the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine in his left arm, just hours after 80,000 doses of this vaccine landed in South Africa. He smiled and laughed as he administered the shot, and the crowd clapped. But seriously, he said, this is a big deal. The first shots will go to frontline health workers at public and private clinics.
This day represents a real milestone for us as South Africans, that finally the vaccines are here and they are being administered. And I was rather pleased that there were five people who were vaccinated before me, and they are health workers. And it was a joy to watch them, to see whether anything had happened to them. And gladly, nothing had happened to them. And it means that being vaccinated is a fairly straightforward process. And I'd like to invite South Africans to take this up so that we can all be safe, we can all be healthy.
Wednesday's vaccinations could turn around what has been a disappointing narrative for the continent's viral epicenter. The nation carries the bulk of the continent's cases, with 1.49 million confirmed cases and 48,000 deaths. Earlier this month, South Africa received 1 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine. But shortly thereafter, it was followed by the disappointing announcement that a study conducted in South Africa found that this vaccine is not totally effective against the highly contagious variant of the virus that is prevalent in South Africa. Health Minister Zweli Mkhize told local media that another 420,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine would land in the next 4 weeks, along with another 20 million doses of the two-shot Pfizer vaccine. In all, the nation plans to inoculate 40 million people, about 67% of the population. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Australia's government has condemned Facebook for its surprise move to prevent Australians from sharing news that also blocked some government communications and commercial pages. Australian officials say Facebook retaliated after the House of Representatives passed a law that would make Facebook and Google pay for Australian journalism. The legislation must be passed by the Senate to become law. Google and Facebook fear Australia's proposed law will become an expensive precedent that other countries will follow. A court in Belarus has sent two female journalists to prison on charges of violation of public order after they covered a protest against the nation's authoritarian president. The court in the Belarusian capital of Minsk on Thursday handed two-year sentences to Katsiana Bagvalava and Daria Chutsova of the Belsat TV channel. They were arrested in November while doing live coverage of a protest in Minsk and charged with, quote, organizing actions rudely violating public order, unquote. The two journalists deny the accusations. The Prime Minister of Georgia has announced his resignation following a court ruling that ordered the arrest of a man who leads the ex-Soviet nation's top opposition party. Prime Minister Georgi Gakaria said he was stepping down because of disagreements with his own team over the case of Nika Milia, chairman of the United National Movement opposition party. The Tbilisi court on Wednesday ruled to place Milia, who is accused of organizing mass violence during anti-government protests in 2019, in pre-trial detention. The African Center for Disease Control and Prevention says the first 1 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine for COVID-19 are expected to arrive next week for distribution in some 20 countries of the continent. The doses are the first of some 7 million coming from the Serum Institute in India. Africa CDC Director John Nkengasong and his colleagues did not immediately say which countries on the 54-nation continent will receive the first shipment, but Nkengasong said Thursday that health workers will get the shots. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. A UN report finds nearly 10 years of warfare in Syria has been marked by what investigators describe as the most heinous violations of international humanitarian and human law rights. The UN report finds nearly 10 years of warfare in Syria has been marked by what investigators describe as the most heinous violations of international humanitarian and human rights law, including genocide, with civilians bearing the brunt of past and ongoing atrocities. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
An analysis of Syria's decade-long war concludes no party has clean hands. The three-member Commission of Inquiry on Syria accuses all warring factions of committing horrific crimes for short-lived political gain or under the pretext of fighting terrorism. It says the main victims of the international crimes are the Syrian people. Commission Chair Paolo Pinheiro says children, women, and men have paid the price of a brutal authoritarian government, which he says has unleashed overwhelming violence to quell dissent.
Opportunistic foreign funding, arms, and other support to the warring parties poured fuel on this fire that the world has been content to watch burn. As the conflict drags on, the absence of decisive action by the community of states as a whole has nourished the culture of impunity that has developed inside Syria today.
The report examines what it says are unscrupulous tactics used by all warring parties for territorial gain at the expense of the population. It documents incidents of aerial bombardments by the Syrian government and its Russian allies, and the use of chemical weapons by President Bashar al-Assad's forces on 38 occasions. It describes indiscriminate mortar and rocket attacks and the use of improvised explosive devices against civilians by terrorists and other armed groups. Commission member Karen Koning Abu Zaid says the Syrian civilian population has been subject to modern-day sieges over the last 10 years, leading to starvation and restrictions on humanitarian aid reaching people in dire need.
There are basic human rights and humanitarian needs, food, water, health care, and education that must be met regardless of which group controls which given territory. This continuing race to the bottom regarding respect for the human rights of Syrians must stop.
The Commission is calling for greater international efforts to end the conflict and put the country on a path toward peace and justice. But it warns durable peace in Syria will not be possible if victims' demands for justice and accountability are not met. Since the conflict erupted in March 2011, the United Nations estimates 400,000 people have been killed and more than 12 million people have been displaced within Syria and as refugees in neighboring countries and abroad. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Intense fighting has been reported along several fronts outside the Yemeni city of Marib, controlled by the Saudi-backed Yemeni government of President Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi. Iranian-backed Houthi rebels who control the nearby capital of Sana'a have been trying to capture Marib and strategic points surrounding it, including oil and gas production facilities. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Yemen's Iranian-backed Houthi militia fighters claim to have captured territory overlooking the city of Marib, held by fighters loyal to President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi. Video on Houthi media claims to show Houthi fighters pushing back government forces. Marib is located about 120 kilometers east of Sana'a.
أعلن الجيش الوطني اليوم مقتل 23 عنصراً من عناصر ميليشيا الحوثي الإنقلابية وإصابة آخرين في محاولة.
Media loyal to the Saudi-backed Hadi government are reporting that his forces pushed back the fighters along the nearby Kasara front, killing several dozen people over a 24-hour period. VOA could not independently confirm the claims by either side. Arab media also reported that off the coast of Somalia, a U.S. naval ship captured a number of small vessels involved in smuggling Iranian weapons to the Houthis in Yemen. Houthi media showed video of Houthi fighters on small pickup trucks capturing the Marib Dam outside the city Monday. Photos also showed Houthi commanders in front of a military camp they reportedly captured from President Hadi's forces. Saudi warplanes reportedly strafed Houthi positions on the ground, recapturing some territory. Abdul Wahab Tawaf, former Yemeni ambassador to Syria, told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya television that the Houthis were bombing civilian refugee camps outside Marib with rockets and sending children to Marib on suicide missions to try and capture oil and gas production facilities. Children can be seen on videos of pro-Houthi media carrying guns and riding on Houthi pickup trucks during the recent fighting outside of Marib. Khatar Abu Diab teaches political science at the University of Paris. He notes that the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is seeking a solution to the Yemen conflict, including reversing a decision by the previous Trump administration to designate the Houthis as terrorists. Abu Diab, however, tells VOA the Houthis remain an Iranian proxy force and do not appear willing to seek compromise. He says amid the Biden administration efforts to change course in Yemen, the Houthis are escalating fighting in Marib and launching armed drones over Saudi territory, including Abha Airport. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
U.S. military officials are finding a hesitancy within the ranks to take the COVID-19 vaccine. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
By the thousands, troops are refusing to take the vaccine or putting it off. A recent Kaiser Family Foundation survey found military resistance is around 50%, which the Joint Staff's top doctor says mirrors that of the general population. The military services say they're working to knock down wild internet rumors about the vaccine's side effects, but they do think they found one potential way to sell the vaccine. The chance to deploy. Sailors on ships heading to sea last week were choosing to get vaccinated at rates higher than 80 to 90%. Sagar Magani, Washington.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batley, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Join
Issues in the News moderator Shana Estulin and a panel of Washington experts as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the WHO grants an emergency authorization to the coronavirus vaccine made by AstraZeneca, a move that should allow its partners to ship millions of doses to countries worldwide. Don't miss Issues in the News.